Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, March 14th, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, Alicia Hughes Scandies, Allison Holtkamp, and Corin Hughes Scandies will highlight this weekend's Club Baby Seal performances. Andy Klein, Lou Logan, and Jamie Karnick will tell us about the new podcast, Bridge from Nowhere. We'll get a preview of Perseverance Theater's upcoming performances of To Kill a Mockingbird. And Melanie Rodriguez and her daughter, Kaija Guthrie, will talk about the Tlingit Culture Language Program. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here, live and local, on a Juno afternoon. Currently 27 degrees at the Juno International Airport.
This is National Native News. I'm Art Hughes, in for Antonio Gonzalez. The Standing Rock Sioux and the Cheyenne River Sioux tribes are asking a federal judge to stop the pending flow of oil through the Dakota Access Pipeline. They want the judge to delay filling the pipeline until their appeal of a rejected claim against the pipeline construction is decided. The company backing the pipeline, Energy Transfer Partners, expects to finish the project and start transporting oil as early as this week. A bill that expands the governor's ability to respond to potential protests has passed through the South Dakota State Legislature. The legislation is in anticipation of demonstrations against the Keystone XL pipeline in the state. The law has an emergency clause, meaning once signed by the governor, it will go into effect immediately. Lee Strubinger reports.
That emergency clause is what held up the bill as it worked through the legislature. State Democrats opposed it, and conservative Republicans viewed it as a power grab by the governor. The bill allows the governor to prohibit no more than 20 people on school and public land, allow outside counsel for criminal defense, and stiffens penalties to prevent protesters from blocking highways and occupying highway right-of-ways. Some House Democrats changed their vote after public safety officials briefed them on potential actions against the Keystone XL pipeline. Democrat Representative Dan Ahlers voted no against the bill, but changed his vote after being informed about safety concerns.
You know, I talked to our local sheriff and collected a little more info and data and decided that I wanted to hedge on the side of safety and then continue to work, and hopefully with this letter from the governor to the tribes to get them together and meet, that maybe we can mend a few fences there too.
Ahlers wouldn't comment on what information he received, but other Democrats didn't budge. Representative Sean Bordeaux represents portions of the Rosebud Reservation.
I think what we're doing here is sending a message to the tribes that we don't care about what they think.
South Dakota Governor Dennis Dugard sent letters to all nine tribes in the state encouraging communication on how to better handle looming pipeline protests. For National Native News, I'm Lee Schrubinger in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Tribal and business leaders say archaic federal regulations, which guide anyone who conducts business on reservations, need to be modernized to aid economic development in Indian country. They say Indian trader regulations often create hurdles. As Antonio Gonzalez reports, a federal agency is seeking input from tribes on whether or not revisions are needed.
Federal regulation of trade and commerce on reservations has consisted of licensing Indian traders. Those regulations were implemented in the 1900s and have not been updated for decades. The Interior Department is holding tribal consultations nationwide on possible revisions. Representatives from the Bureau of Indian Affairs and Office of the Solicitor were in Las Vegas, Nevada Monday, hearing from tribal and business leaders attending the Reservation Economic Summit. Tribal leaders say they need to have broader authority to regulate what happens on their lands, and they do not want to see added federal control. Michael Marchand is Colville Tribal Chairman.
Sometimes there's dual taxation, so if a tribe wants to tax something, maybe the state taxes it. So for the business person, they're getting double taxed. They don't like that, and they figure that's not a workable situation for them, so they leave. There's ambiguity in who has authority to regulate some reservations. If you own all your land, that's good, you have jurisdiction and authority, but many reservations are checkerboarded, or else there's combinations of tribal trust lands and fee lands, and the Supreme Court has not been really kind to tribes in those situations.
Other tribal leaders and business professionals who provided comments say the regulations are rarely used and do not prevent abuses. They also say tribal governments take on increased responsibilities but do not receive federal funds for infrastructure or services. The next Interior Department consultation takes place this week in Prior Lake, Minnesota. Written and oral comments will be accepted through April 10th. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
And I'm Art Hughes.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support great causes like National Native News. Just select KNBA-FM Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, March 14th, 2017. Scott Burton, your host. My first guest in the studio today is Allison Holtkamp. She is part of a comedy troupe called Club Baby Seal, who will be performing this Saturday at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. Welcome to the show, Allison.
Thank you.
So it's pretty exciting that we have a stand-up comedy group in this town now. Tell us how you all got together, how this come to be.
Well, we were all crying together one day, and we decided that we needed a little joy in our lives. No, I think it just started. I think legend tells us that Brady Engledew and Nate Williams were playing poker late one night, and they were making each other laugh, and they're like, maybe other people might think we're funny, and so they decided to do a little stand-up comedy. And luckily, they know people who can make stuff happen, and so Nate's girlfriend, Haley Duran, is one of our managers, and they put on a house show. And so Brady, Nate, Corin Hughes-Scandies, Alicia Hughes-Scandies, and myself, and Corin's girlfriend, Grace Lee, signed on as one of the other managers, and we invited a bunch of friends over and did some shows in a living room.
And as part of that legend, did you really buy a curtain that looked like a brick wall from Amazon?
We did. And what's crazy is Nate now has two brick curtains, because that's what happens when you become a stand-up comedian. You have to do it in front of a brick wall. It's like if you were to get an Encyclopedia Britannica and look up stand-up comedy, it would say requirement brick curtain.
Alicia Hughes-Scandies, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so now you're this big group that gets together, and you were telling me you get together and write as friends and comedians.
We
do. What's that look like?
Well, mostly, you don't really know if you're funny if you're just sitting alone with a cup of coffee and you're thinking, this table's funny. I wonder if there's something in this. So we are sure to get together as a group and say, is there something funny in a kitchen table? And
no.
Alicia says no.
The answer's no. Yeah, there's no quicker way to find out that you don't have anything.
But that takes guts even with your friends, right?
Oh, it's terrible.
I would say it makes us more nervous to do it with each other.
Yeah, because we're like, when we are getting together and seeing what's funny, there isn't a lot of laughter. It's more critique.
It's heavier on the critique. It does. It's funny how nerve-wracking it can be, you know, without the lights and the audience. that's a quick way to get your heart pounding.
It's more like, that's funny.
But yeah, you might know.
Nope, move on.
I really like what you were going for.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the Goldtown Nickelodeon, such an intimate space. You know, you're right there with your audience.
Yeah.
So two shows, Saturday at 9 and 10:30?
And we haven't completely sold out yet, which is really exciting, so people can show up probably and get tickets. But we are aiming to sell out. We would like that.
Yes, that's a wish list item.
It's only $10. And someone said it's the cheapest entertainment in Juneau, but maybe you'd have to find out for yourself.
That's true. Well, if you were wondering what new material we were working on,
that's true.
Yeah,
exciting. So when you're sitting around that table and throwing ideas back and forth, or you're on stage, what's working? What's funny to Juno Whites, and what's funny to your friends? What's getting the best reactions?
Death. Yeah, all the, no. All the cringeworthy ones. It's interesting. I think a little bit, it kind of runs across the board because our material varies from comic to comic kind of a lot. You know, you touch on common themes, but certainly style really varies. And I like that, you know, if you don't connect with this portion of the audience, maybe if I can't make them laugh, maybe something Allison says just knocks it out of the park for them.
Oh, yikes. That's a lot of pressure.
If not, maybe the boys will.
Yeah, maybe.
You might want some real stupid comedy. No, I'm kidding.
They're not here. We can say that.
And will it be like the last show? I remember there's sort of two sets, so each of you was on for how long?
We each get 10 minutes-ish.
That's the sort of where we're aiming for. I think it's been more like 12. But
yeah, that sounds right. Depending on the comic.
So we won't name names.
And we're hoping the first show may or may not have Corin Huskandes, and so we are going to... The rest of us maybe do longer sets, and then he'll join us for the 10:30 show, and we'll do more condensed sets.
All right. I've asked both of you this question before, but you're both artists in many ways, actors, musicians. How does comedy, how does stand-up compare to the other art forms that you practice? Is it different, the same?
I think comedy is super personal. And, I mean, I think that's to some degree true of all art, but... Now, like I'm putting on my thoughtful artist hat. It's, you know, I think there's something so special about sharing a laugh with someone because you're bridging. You can, if you have a laugh with someone, you could be just from different walks of life. And so to successfully connect with an audience and be sharing that laugh, you know, you said something and they think it's funny, too. It just feels like the most personal thing you can do.
I wish we were on TV right now so our listeners could see your hand gestures. See? When you threw the laugh at the audience and it came back, that was pretty awesome.
And then weaving it all together with the fingers. Yeah, that's comedy. Finger weaving.
A lot of finger motions.
How about you, Austin?
Oh, I would totally agree with Alicia. It's personal, which makes it really scary because you're like, these are my jokes. These are the first moments that I'm saying them out loud, and you know, we always talk about like the fear of bombing, but like someone's gonna take it and like it or not, and that's what feels so exhilarating at the end of it. I always feel like, oh my gosh, I'm still alive, that was so awesome, let's do it again, because it's scary. It's not like standing on stage and being a character and interacting with someone and closing out the audience. The audience is the other character that you rely on in comedy, and if they're not giving it back to you, then it can feel difficult. So what we're saying is laugh.
I mean, I'm thinking of music because I know you have that background. But, you know, if I've got the guitar, there's nothing you can hide behind. You've just got the microphone in your brain, and that's all you're going on stage with.
Okay. For folks that haven't been to your shows yet, how would you describe, you know, who's going to enjoy it? It starts at 9. It's kind of an adult crowd, would you say? How would you describe it?
I would say it's definitely an adult crowd. It's 21 and over. You have to have your ID. I would say it's R-rated for sure.
Yeah.
We try not to really censor ourselves yet, although we have been offered different kinds of challenges, like the radio, to try to...
PG.
Yeah.
I would, but that being said, I don't want to give anyone the impression that they're going to be, I mean, an R rating is good if you're easily, you know, you might want to, offended, maybe you want to steer clear, but it's not some...
There's no nudity.
You're not going to feel uncomfortable. I've gone to a variety of performances in this town, and it's not going to be one of those ones where you're trying to pick a seat close to the door. It's not going to make you uncomfortable. And if you're not wild about someone, they're going to be off stage in 10 minutes. So
that's a good point. Yeah.
Just wait it out.
So, All right, so these shows are Saturday at 9 and then a show at 10:30. Tickets available on the Club Baby Seal Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
What's next? Netflix special?
Yes,
That's the leather special. How you
from the Gold Town to Netflix.
We are That's hoping to get more people involved. We're still trying to figure out how to make that happen, whether or not it's through an audition or an open mic. But I would say for anyone interested in performing stand-up comedy to come to our show and see if it looks like something that might be fun for you, and to get in touch with us. We have an email address, which is theclubbabyseal@gmail.com, and stay tuned because we want to expand this at some point.
And the title, is it true that it was a snow fort of Nate Williams when he was in fifth grade or something?
That's what I've heard.
All right.
Wasn't there, sadly. Wish I was.
We weren't there in the original snow fort.
It feels like we were.
There was a brick curtain, I heard, in that snow fort, though.
Gotta have one. You've got to have one.
All right. Well, the shows, again, are this Saturday at 9 p.m. at the Gold Town Nick downtown at 9 o'clock, and then 10:30. Tickets available for both at Facebook. Thank you both for coming on the show. Anything else you'd like to add?
Don't miss it.
Yeah, I'd say it's unlike anything else in town, so come on down.
Great. Thanks, you too.
Thanks, Scott.
All right, thanks, Scott.
Comedy is easy once you know the basics, starting with the concept of surprise. Take what folks think, give it a wink. You try it on now for size.
Me? What's black and white and red all over?
I don't know, sir. What is black and white and red all over?
Those guys. After I behead them. Huh?
Huh? Comedy gold. I'm telling you, it's comedy gold. You're killing it if that doesn't slay you.
I'll murder you cold.
Swear to God, it's comedy gold.
Well, our work here is done, so
no,
I'll just be...
Oh, we're just getting started.
Right.
Lesson two.
Lesson number two is also fundamental. Something that we call the rule of three. Set up the joke. Give it a stroke. Third time and bam!
Yes, not me! Three serfs walk into a bar. The first serf orders a hot grog. The second serf orders a hot grog. The third serf orders a hot grog. But he has no money, and neither do the other two, because they're serfs.
Comedy gold. I promise you it's comedy gold. Hilarious, the crowd will be rolling.
The heads will be rolling.
Not with all this comedy gold.
More, give me more.
Props can be a riot, ethnic humor can't deny it. Or a pratfall if it's properly applied. Depending on the viewer, take it blacker, work it bluer. Or try an observational aside.
Have you ever noticed how levers have pieces falling off of them? I mean, what's that all about?
Comedy gold.
Comedy gold.
I'm telling you, it's comedy gold.
Comedy gold.
No doubt about it. Talent like yours, sir, you'll never get old.
And if it does, you'll never get old, because you'll be dead when I execute you. Get it?
Got it.
Good.
Gonna be killer. Gonna be ace. Coach, dying of laughter.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, March 14th, 2017. Scott Burton, your host, is about 20 minutes past the top of the hour. And we have another crew of comedians in the...
Really?
I'll take that.
And writers in the studio right now. They have started a new podcast called Bridge from Nowhere. Please welcome Andy Klein, Lou Logan, and Jamie Karnick to Juno Afternoon.
Scott, how you doing?
Hello.
Hi, thank you.
Writers, we haven't written a thing in our lives. I haven't.
I write a lot of angry things.
You're just a troll, internet troll.
In the dark. Well, no, not even on the internet. Just spiral notebooks.
Just on the wall. Rage. Next to his toilet on the wall. It's
so
awful.
Nice.
Yeah. It's more oral tradition, it sounds like.
We started a podcast. It's kind of weird to think about and talk about, but out loud to people, but we've done it.
Podcasters.
Yeah, we've been recording us talking, and then we've been interviewing interesting people and relatives and dads and all kinds of stuff. We've been interviewing folks and doing working on it for the past 3 months almost.
We've
right?
had a house band with George Kuhar and Steve Nelson.
Yeah, the house band. I know. We've got a house band, Scott. We've got a house band, man. It's a show.
A local house band of very creative, talented individuals.
Yeah.
It's a real deal show.
It's a real deal. When you have a house band, well, you got mouths to feed now.
It premieres this Saturday.
Sunday, I think.
Sunday at 8 p.m.
Does it really?
Sunday at 8,
Uh-oh.
You guys.
Wait, really?
Did you know?
No, I didn't know that.
We're on Sunday at 8, man.
Wow.
Episode 1 is playing
right.
Sunday at 8.
Who am
I? We better record those promos.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we ought to go. I just figured it'd be the best way to tell you guys, just to bring you into the studio and tell you on air.
Just cut those last, like, 15 seconds. That's a good promo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, our producer sent over a clip, as I understand.
Really?
Yeah. I guess there's a clip. I don't know. Do you know what this is?
No, I don't know what this is.
I don't know what this is. It's
I actually
a clip.
Don't know what this is.
I do know what this is, actually. But
let's see what this sounds like.
How old were you when you were playing baseball?
Third grade, so 15.
Welcome to Bridge from Nowhere, life on the far northern edge of America. I'm Andy. Lived in a truck for a while, didn't you?
No.
And I'm Jamie. You know, Alaska living's a little bit different, but also a little bit the same. And we like to talk about that, and we also like to talk about adventures and Star Wars and bears and poo.
You'd be surprised what people send down the toilet.
And I'm Lou. We also...
Damn it! Damn it!
And I'm Lou. We also bring in friends and even experts to talk to us about some of the things that make life here interesting.
You know, when you lose your kidneys, you lose your ability to make blood, and so I was like a vampire.
I believe they call it a lard florgan.
Or a yarkashnargan.
I believe it is a yarkashnargan.
I thought it was a flobberdinker.
I think it might be a flobberdinker. Oh, yeah, go to the flobberdinker. We got you all set up out there.
That's all to come on Bridge from Nowhere.
So I'd like to listen to more of that right now.
Yeah, I see
but,
how that goes.
That's all we have so far.
That's all we got.
Yeah, I owe you 59 minutes.
Right now it's just that on a loop. It's kind of good. After like half an hour, you really get to another place. But,
yeah, you can work out to it.
So you guys have interviewed a lot of people. You've put a lot of work into the show. What inspired you to start it?
I think maybe it was a germ of an idea I had. It's exactly what Club Baby Seal was just saying, right? We're hanging out with friends who were funny, and then you kind of go, wow, this is should maybe this has a broader audience, or maybe it doesn't, but maybe I just want to record it and work on something like that. And it's been really fun and creative, and you know, it's been a really cool excuse to go talk to friends like Steve or you know, George Kuhar,
force friends to talk to us,
yeah, on tape. And even your dad, we called Lou's dad, and Lou's dad worked up in the 70s, worked up here in Alaska during the pipeline.
He told us about a dozen different stories, including getting shot at and...
On the ground that is now Sullivan Arena in Anchorage, which used to be a field where they shoot at people.
Yeah, he said he ran in zigzag formation to avoid the shots, but he could hear him go, because he had turned the station on a guy's TV, and the guy didn't like it.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to Anchorage, 1970s.
And then we have a running segment that we're really excited about that we call Poo Corner, where we talk to the solid waste engineer at Juneau Solid Waste Treatment Plant, one of the engineers there, Marissa Capito, and she tells us all about poo. It's amazing. You're in, right? It's amazing,
it's
right, Scott?
Super interesting.
It is.
And I thought I knew everything there was to know.
What inspired that segment?
Lou.
Well, I'd like to say I had a role in that.
Yes, you did.
I mean, come on now.
Jamie, when did you eat corn?
I thought that was the whole show for a while. He's considered
a producer nation at this point.
Yeah.
But, we're like adolescent, grown-up adolescents, and poo
pseudo
comes up.
Adults.
Yeah, poo comes up. So, and we thought, well, that's actually, boy, there's trained scientists that work in that, and we know one of them, and she's really funny and cool and interesting in her own right, and so we got her in. And
it's interesting here in Juneau, where it's a little different than a lot of other places,
yeah,
too.
There's a lot to think about.
Pretty good example of our whole notion of, like, living up here is kind of the same, but also kind of different sometimes.
And that's, like you say, the sort of the whole notion for the show and what your interviews tend to revolve around?
I think so. I mean, you know, we end up straying pretty immediately from that, on almost all of our segments. But the idea, I think Jamie and I have that experience of moving here. So our family thinks we're crazy, right? You know, like we're the crazy one that moved to Alaska. Lou's from here, but lived outside of the state for a while and then came back. So has some perspective on that. But it's also always fun to bounce stuff, our perceptions of what Alaska is, off of Lou, because Lou's like, well, that's just Alaska, man. You know, that's just living.
I mean, that's stupid.
Right.
That's a lot of that, too.
Yeah. We just call each other stupid a lot.
Yeah, stupid.
But not only the comedy piece, but then also the talent. So, like, Steve Nelson and George Kuhar are two of the most talented musicians I know, and they're terrific people. And we've been doing a kind of regular meeting of a bunch of friends over at Steve's house called Man Movie Night, and we get to watch those guys then jam on the Hammond B3 organ that Steve's got set up, and the drum set and the guitar. So some of that stuff turned into, well, this should be a house band, man. We should get these guys to play, and that people should hear this, because they were just jamming and making stuff up that never got heard again. So that was part of that idea too, of let's bring that to the fore, you know. And so,
very cool.
Yeah.
And I know you guys are all public media fans, radio fans. You know, I know you listen to podcasts. Andy, you and I have talked about that before. What do you think sort of is the place of the podcast? What's its role? When do people listen to it? And how did you find that form for what you guys are doing?
I know, Jamie, you listen to a lot of them.
Yeah,
right?
I used to listen to them when I was falling asleep, actually, which I hope people do with our show.
Yes, that'd be a high compliment.
It'll put you right out.
We're actually sponsored by Lunestra.
Yeah. I think they're interesting. I think they're a lot like public radio for me. I mean, it's interesting conversations, but sometimes at 4 in the afternoon, I don't want to hear All Things Considered sometimes. Sometimes I want to hear a couple people talk about English soccer or, you know, Bigfoot or whatever else. So it's sort of like that, but just accessible all the time. And I find myself just clicking on ones, a lot of them produced by NPR and public radio, but a lot of them aren't too. And it's just interesting to see. Like, I had no idea about Bigfoot, and I learned a lot about Bigfoot from podcasts.
And there aren't a lot of podcasts that are Alaska, theme, or even touch on what it's like to live here. And we kind of talk in our podcast, we kind of, I think, imagine an outside audience, not necessarily a Juneau-specific audience. We try to explain, if we talk about Willoughby Avenue, we say, oh, well, that's downtown in this area. You know, we try to explain and give a little bit of context to our stories.
Yeah, I mean, I think a big motivation for me on this is, I go see my mom every so often, and my mom lives in Minnesota, is super excited I live in Alaska, and watches, all of the Alaska reality television. You know,
which
Wild Troopers
full,
Alaska.
Right? They're all complete.
Deadliest Lunch and all of these shows that they have. And,
well, we do that.
And you sort of realize, that becomes a perception of what it's like here, and it just isn't. So, the ability to kind of bring real people, talk to real people about real stuff that's going on up here, and just, you know, and it's also just fun. Yeah,
you know, we were talking in one segment. We were talking about these guys went out to Windfall Lake Cabin and just were out there on a really windy, that really windy spell we had a few weeks ago. And you realize that people come up here, and to them, that's the biggest adventure they'll ever have in their life is a hike out to Windfall Lake Cabin. To us, it's an adventure, but kind of not a gigantic deal. It's sort of something that we do and we really enjoy. But that thing about, you know, just because you're outdoors in Alaska doesn't mean you're extreme, right?
Extreme.
But it doesn't mean that it isn't really interesting and possibly dangerous and really cool and not like going out to a city park down south either. You know, it's a combination. We always kind of think that real life in Juneau is this combination of the perception that people have about extreme living combined with what it's really kind of like to live in a small town, probably in lots of places, you know?
Got it. You've touched on it so far. And how many programs have you produced already?
I produced 3 so far in the can, ready to go. So we've got the next 3 weeks covered.
Very cool.
They're an hour long, you know, so it's an hour entertainment, we hope, and fun, and hanging out with us and friends and listening to music and that kind of thing. And, Sundays at 8 is when K2's playing them. And then they'll be available for download as well at thebridgefromnowhere.com.
All right. What in these 3 episodes, that's a lot of work, 3 hours of radio production. I can't imagine how much time you've been in the studio.
It's a lot. You know, we go in on Sunday afternoons and record for a few hours, and then I take
eight
those.
8 hours or so.
Yeah, 8 hours.
Andy takes that and gets 15 serviceable minutes out of it.
Right.
Eight sweaty hours.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It is hot in these studios, by the way, Scott. Is there anything you can do about that?
Scott can't. Scott doesn't have the power to do that.
Okay.
No, you're talking to the wrong guy.
Having spent some time in the studios now.
Jamie, I'll work on it.
Jamie's lip is sweaty.
Jamie's been sledding today, too.
That's true. I just came off the sledding.
He forgot how sweaty it is to sled.
Yeah.
Quit wearing that ape suit out there, man.
Keeps me warm and dry.
In these, you know, 3 hours of production, what's been a takeaway for each of you? Something maybe you've gleaned from these interviews or putting these together?
That's a really good one, Scott. Good question. Number one, I was blown away by the music that the house band recorded. We went over to Steve's house and just listened to George and Steve play. And we just kind of thought, man, if we end up with, you know, if you guys, hey, just play, and if we end up with a few minutes, that'll be great. We ended up with, like, an album. I mean, like, a legitimately great album, as in retrospect you would expect from those two guys who've played music their whole lives and live it and breathe it. So that was really cool, that sort of hidden talent of people that you kind of know just as really great friends,
sure.
And then... oh, my God, they're also really talented and can make incredible, you know, music or be funny or and all that kind of stuff. So that's been really great.
How about you, Lou?
Well, after listening to some of the shows, I realized I really have a weird voice. And I kind of always knew it, but listening to it opens up a whole new world of strangeness and weirdness. Which I guess
what's
is fitting for the show.
It's not weird. What's weird about it?
Well, in my head, it sounds like, hello,
yeah.
How are you? But in real life, when I heard it, it was more like, hi, my name's Lou.
Well, that's
radio.
It's pretty accurate. Yeah. We're not going to sugarcoat it, man.
How about you, Jamie?
I guess for me, what's been interesting is we've talked to a bunch of people that we know. But I've heard stories from every one of them that I've never heard before. And this idea that, like, one of the things about here is everybody up here has a story and has dozens of stories. And that's kind of the other thing that I think is really cool about the show as we grow it, is whether it's a story of Andy or Lou that I've never heard before.
Yeah, we never knew Andy had worms until someone of the stories.
I had no idea.
They're terrible.
Yeah.
And Carno over
there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I spent a year going as Carno in fifth grade.
We never did that.
By choice. Yeah.
By choice.
Because I thought it was awesome. I got like a satin jacket with Carno embroidered on it.
I wish.
Still fits.
You still have it?
No.
Oh, my God.
It got too stained.
I'm pretty sure I burned it. But yeah, just this idea that there's a million stories up here. I mean, it sounds cliche, but it's totally been an awakening to me, and I'm excited about doing more and more of that.
It's really
keep
fun.
Right.
Yeah.
Tune in this Sunday to KTOO right here. 104.3, or if you're listening on KRNN 102.7 this Sunday night at 8 p.m., or go to the website again.
Bridgefromnowhere.com. And Lou built that site out, and it looks awesome. And
I guess that means I have to finish it now.
I think we'll have to finish it now. Did you see Jamie's bio I put on it, by the way?
Oh, no, I did not do my bio.
Yeah, that's good.
It's the world premiere, really, right?
This is going to be the world premiere of a brand new show that we think is going to take over the world. And, you know, listen to it now before your friends in New York start listening to it and tell you in about it, you know. Like, you've been on board from the beginning.
Listen to it now before they cancel us.
Yeah, after three episodes. We're not going to need anymore.
Listen to it before we sell out. You know, I knew them when it was about the radio, man.
That's Jamie Carnick, Lou Logan, and Andy Klein. World premiere of Bridge from Nowhere this Sunday at 8 p.m. on KTOO. You guys, thanks so much for coming on to the show. And here, you know, as writers, here is... you know, Writer's Almanac.
Oh, nice.
Garrison Keillor.
Garrison Keillor.
Hello.
Writer's Almanac. And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 14th of March, 2017. The birthday of Albert Einstein, born in Ulm, Germany, 1879. As a little kid, even before kindergarten, he was fascinated by a compass needle, which made a big impression on him, lasted a whole lifetime. He loved math, hated school, dropped out, taught himself calculus, went to work in the Swiss patent office in Bern, where his job was to evaluate patent applications.
he found it a fairly easy job, and so it allowed him plenty of time to work on his own scientific investigations and theories. 1905, he wrote his paper on the special theory of relativity, which said that if the speed of light is constant, and if all natural laws are the same in every frame of reference, then both time and motion are relative to the observers. He published three more papers in the same year, each of which was just as revolutionary as the first, including the paper that included his famous equation E equals mc squared, E being energy, M is mass, and C stands for the velocity of light. Einstein said, "The pursuit of truth and beauty is a sphere of activity in which we are permitted to remain children all our lives." It's the birthday of Sylvia Beach, born Baltimore, 1887, the proprietor of the English language bookstore in Paris, Shakespeare and Company, who put out the first edition of James Joyce's Ulysses in 1922. It's the birthday of the humorist Max Schulman, born St. Paul, 1919, who said, "I turned early to humor as my branch of writing because life was bitter and I was not." And it's the birthday of the photographer Deanne Arbus, born Deanne Nemirov in New York City, 1923, took portraits of transvestites, dwarfs, twins, triplets, carnival performers, sometimes ordinary people with troubling expressions, who said, "I work from awkwardness. If I stand in front of something, instead of arranging it, I arrange myself." Here's a poem for today by Ronald Wallace, "Hamburger Heaven." "Tonight we find them again, parked under the stars. No one ever eats inside in heaven, beeping the tired car hop with her page boy and mascara for a paper boat of French fries drenched in sauce, a smashed hamburger baptized with spices. They're 16 and in love. The night is hot, sweet, and tangy on their tongues. Why do we stop? They're in heaven. After all, listening to the fry cook in the kitchen with his savory benedictions, the AM radio playing Love Me Tender, Peggy Sue, unperturbed by the future with its franchises and malls, its conglomerates and information highways. Is there something we would tell them here in Hamburger Heaven, where the nights go on forever, where desires resurrected and every hunger's filled? Wait, do we call out? But now they've seen us, close behind them, with our fervent thou shalt nots, our longings glaring in the rearview mirror, and they've turned on the ignition, and they've floored it, and are gone." A poem by Ronald Wallace, "Hamburger Heaven," from his collection For a Limited Time Only, published by University of Pittsburgh Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Progressive Insurance. With insurance for cars, home, boat, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. And by TIAA, whether it's investing, advice, banking, or retirement, TIAA is committed to planning for your success. Learn more at TIAA.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support comes from Wild Oven, providing Juno with handmade organic breads delivered fresh to Foodland, Super Bear, and Rainbow Foods. Wild Oven, Juno's artisan bread.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, March 14th, 2017. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 20 minutes until the top of the hour, and I'm being joined in the studio now by Perseverance Theater's crew for To Kill a Mockingbird. Forrest Davis, welcome to the show. Forrest.
Hi.
Nice to have you here. and also director Art Roach.
Hi, Scott.
Nice to have you here. Amy O'Neill, Hauk Stage Mom.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
We have great stage moms.
Art, let's start with you because beyond director of this play, you're the ED at Perseverance. Mm-hmm. How did To Kill a Mockingbird come to be?
It's been on the list for a while. It's a great play. I think it's a good play for our time, and it's such a great story that it works really well on the stage. So it's been on, you know, there's a every year a classic piece, and this one was the one this year.
All right. Forrest, you played Jem.
Yes.
Tell us about your character and tell us about some of the people you're surrounded by in this story.
Well, Jem's very much the older brother of Scout. He looks after her, and he tells her all the stories of the town, like Boo Radley, and how he eats raw squirrels and cats. And he's kind of disappointed that Atticus is at work so much. He really wants to play with Atticus, like football, and he wants Atticus to do more things, as well as Scout does. He's not quite sure what to think of Dill, which is Scout's and Jem's' friend who just moved, kind of.
Anything you want to add, Amy?
No, I think that they, you know, the youth in the play interact with their father, with their housekeeper, Calpurnia, and then with some neighbors, and some neighbors that they never even meet because they're just hear them through stories, which is Boo Radley. So there's Maudie and Miss Stephanie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who are the neighbors who inform them sort of about the town and inform the audience about the town in kind of in different ways.
And this is a big cast, right?
Yes, about 14 actors, three young actors and 11 adults, and it's some well-known faces and a couple of newcomers from across the state.
What are a few names that we might recognize?
Well, Enrique Bravo is playing Atticus Finch. He's doing a wonderful job. Tom Robinault, one of our regulars, is playing Mr. Gilmer, the attorney that prosecutes the case against Tom Robinson. He has an absolutely chilling scene where he takes him apart on the stand. James Sullivan, our actor in residence, is playing Bob Ewell, the bad guy. There's a wonderful Anchorage-based actor named Taylor Campbell who's making her debut with us as Mayella Ewell, the daughter of Bob Ewell, who is the alleged victim of Tom Robinson. And then Keith McCoy, who people remember from Chicago and A Raisin in the Sun, and Sweeney Todd recently is playing Tom Robinson, just a wonderful Tom Robinson.
That's quite a crew. Mm-hmm. You've outlined the plot a little bit, but if we haven't read the book in a while, remind us what happens.
Well, the play takes place in Macomb, Alabama, which is based on Harper Lee's hometown of Monroeville. It's 1935, and her father is an attorney in the town and also a leader in the town. He's been elected to political office, and he's a very respected member of the community. And when this case comes up, it's Mayella Ewell accuses Tom Robinson of raping her. It's going to be a hot potato. It's going to be a really challenging case. And so the judge taps Atticus to defend Tom Robinson, which is not the usual person who would take on a criminal defense like this. And Atticus decides it's a moment to teach the town a little bit about right and wrong and about equal protection under the law and who it needs to apply to. And he does his best to defend Tom Robinson well in court. Loses the case, but makes his argument. And in the course of that summer of observing all that, Scout and Jem, and to some extent Dill, learn some things about the rules, the unwritten rules of that place and that time.
Yeah, Jem, Forrest, what are a few things that Jem learns about the rules at that time in America?
Well, he knows more about Scout, more than Scout, about all of the really not childish things that happen in Macomb. And in the jailhouse scene, Scout kind of goes charging into a lynch mob and kind of stops him dead and makes him go home. And Scout really grows up during the play. She figures out why people can be so hateful, and I think Jem recognizes that, and he respects her with that amount of maturity.
Okay. What's been the most enjoyable part of this production for you so far?
The cast and the crew. They're just really fun to work with, and I can't wait to finally get on stage with performing with them.
Tonight, right?
Yeah. First preview.
Preview tonight.
Yeah. Okay, and officially opens on Friday?
Correct.
And is there another preview on Thursday?
Yes, there is.
All right. Remind us where to get tickets, Amy.
PTAlaska.org or 463-TIXS or the Jack or the box office.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around this whole crew. It's huge and very talented.
Mm-hmm. It's a great group.
It's a great group.
And a great story, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, thank you all so much for coming on the show today. Am I missing anything? Anything you'd like to add?
I don't think so. We will have some interesting outreach events like poster discussions. So if you tune into the website, you'll hear about that, including a talk about the novel at the Douglas Library on Saturday.
Oh, this Saturday?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, wow. What time is that?
That's 4 o'clock.
Okay, at Douglas Library. Come back and see us as the play keeps going and keep us updated.
Yeah.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. As twilight deepens along a dry West Texas stream bed, a tiny owl peers out from a hole in a sycamore tree. It's an elf owl, the smallest species of owl in the world. Standing less than 6 inches tall, feathered in gray with big yellow eyes, the elf owl weighs less than an ounce and a half, a bit less than a golf ball. And it's a determined predator. Flying out from its tree cavity at dusk, the elf owl hunts beetles, crickets, and spiders, plus the odd lizard or mouse. Larger prey, such as scorpions, with the stingers carefully removed, may end up cached in the nest for later dining. Elf owls live in woodlands and desert cactus habitats in southwest Texas and southern Arizona. In desert habitats, they often nest in woodpecker holes in tall saguaro cactus. They depart the U.S. by October for warmer latitudes of Mexico, where insects are more available in winter. But spring comes early to the American Southwest, and the minuscule owls return by late February or March, ready to begin their breeding season. Travel to Big Bend with Bird Note in August 2017, and you might get to see an elf owl. Learn more at birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
Every Alaskan can make a difference when they file online for their PFD. Pick, click, give. A great and easy way to support nonprofits in Alaska. You simply donate during your PFD application process. There are dozens of nonprofits that you can support in Juneau alone, including KTOO Public Media. The application period for the PFD begins January 1st and runs through March 31st. More information can be found at pickclickgive.org.
Hey, chamber music lovers, it's Symphony Showcase. Please join me, Sally Schlichting, and my symphony friends as we perform music of Bach, Tomasi, Nielsen, and Astor Piazzolla. Hear new works by Beth Leibowitz, William Todd Hunt, and more. Performances are Saturday, March 18th at 8 at Northern Light Church and Sunday at 3 at Aldersgate in the Valley. Tickets and more information at junosymphony.org. See you at the showcase.
You are listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, March 14th, 2017. It's about 12 minutes until the top of the hour. And I have a couple guests here who are going to help us learn about the Tlingit Culture Language Program. We have Kasia, and she is a fourth grader at Harborview. Welcome to the show, Kasia. Nice to have you.
Thank you.
Gunesh Tish for being here. And also her mom, Melanie Rodriguez. Thank you for coming on the show, Melanie.
Thank you.
Okay. Kasia, can you tell us a little bit about what your class is like at Harborview?
We have Miss Jess in every day and Miss Grandma Selena is one of our elders that come in and helps us with words.
Right. Can you share a couple words with us right now that you've learned recently? All right, if you can think about those if you want. Melanie, as her mom, what are some things that you've noticed about the program that you enjoy?
I like that it's an optional program and that all children are open to having their kids in the program, non-natives and natives alike. I also like that the program instills confidence and a sense of culture and community within a K through 5 arena. So she's mixed in with all sorts of grades and she gets to learn about her culture, and it's something that I didn't grow up with. So.
And, okay, so Keisha's in fourth grade. When did she start the Tlingit?
Kindergarten. And so. I also have a seventh grader, Elysium, who grew up in the program as well.
Oh, wow. Very interesting. And so you say the day is different classes, different individuals that they integrate with. Keisha, what is your favorite part of the day?
Tlingit.
Yeah? And what do you like about that?
I like how we get to learn our history, and so no bad things happen, and we would know what to do if there was going to be.
Okay, good answer. And can you think of a few words that you like to speak? And what does that mean?
We will work together.
Can you say it again, please? All right. Thank you for sharing. Melanie, thinking of your seventh grader, you've touched on this a little bit. You talked about confidence. What are some other things that your seventh grader gleaned from the program?
Self-esteem. She still is learning about the Tlingit language, and we learned together at home because I grew up predominantly Filipino. So we are learning Tagalog in the home, and then my kids have the opportunity to learn Tlingit, and I get to learn from them. So I like that we can learn together at home, and that Keisha is still teaching all of us. And even though Ellie has moved on into middle school, and she does take some Tlingit classes, but it's not as immersed as TCLL.
And TCLL, Tlingit Culture Language Program?
Yes.
Okay. Does Keisha come home with stories after school? Mom,
she really likes to talk about the elders and the stories they tell. She really talks about the tribal values and how we can incorporate that at home.
Keisha, can you share a few tribal values with us?
Tribal values like humor and respecting ourselves and others.
Hoshitin.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Be strong.
Okay. And you mentioned Grandma Selena. Can you tell us about Grandma Selena?
She, like, comes in when she can, and whenever she can't, she won't, and she helps us pronounce things, and then she goes to, like, big events and comes to our school and tells us about it.
Okay. And what have you noticed interaction with Grandma Selena, Melanie?
She's kind. The kids really look up to her, and they learn respect from her, I think is a big thing.
Tell us a little bit more, Melanie. You were saying that the Tlingit Culture Language Program is open to Tlingit people who are Tlingit and not Tlingit.
And non-native, yes.
Yeah.
I know there have been some non-natives in the program as well, and it's an immersion program focused on the Tlingit culture. So really, it's at the parent's discretion. If you're a parent and want to enroll your children in the TCLL program, you have the option to do that.
And you were saying that you're also of Filipino descent.
Mm-hmm.
And so do you find that there are some sort of interesting cross-sections where cultures come together and things that we can learn from each other?
Yeah, I think looking up to our elders is a big one, and taking care of our elders is a major one. I think that goes for all cultures. As people get older, we lean on the youngers to take care of us and look after us.
Okay. If somebody wants to learn more about the Tlingit Language, Culture, and Language Program, where can they do that, and how can they become enrolled?
They have an application online at the Juneau School District website. I think it's junoschools.org. And under Harborview, there will be an optional program section there. Or you can contact Harborview directly.
Okay. Gunas Chis, very much for coming on our show today, you two. Is there anything that we're missing? Kasia, anything else that you'd like to tell our listeners in Tlingit or share with us?
Okay. Have a good afternoon.
Okay, tutai.
Gunas Chis.
Gunas Chis.
As a KTO listener, you expect to hear smart conversations about important issues every time you turn on the radio. We bring you facts and analysis, not partisanship or hype, so you can form your own opinions on the news. You count on KTOO for informed, insightful reporting. Don't take coverage like this for granted. It's here for you, thanks to the generous financial support of our listeners. We're raising the funds right now that make KTOO possible. Be part of the effort at ktoo.org.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services in the Jordan Creek Center. Northern Audiology offers diagnostic medical hearing expertise and digital technology hearing instruments. 789-6780.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juneau Afternoon. Tomorrow on the show, Beth Loudon from Big Sisters and Big Brothers will be here to highlight this year's Bowl for Kids' Sake events. Claire Geldof will be here to talk about heroin overdoses and Narcan. We'll learn about this Friday's Poetry Slam, and we'll get an update on Eagle Crest with Jeffrey Clow and Brian Davies. Taking a look at the weather, it's currently 29 degrees at the airport. And a winter storm warning is still in effect until tomorrow morning. The forecast for tonight calls for snow showers, lows around 26. These winds 5 to 10 miles per hour, and the chance of precipitation is 90% with a new snow accumulation of 4 to 6 inches. And the forecast for Wednesday calls for snow showers, highs near 35. East wind around 10 miles per hour, chance of precipitation 80%, new snow accumulation of 1 to 2 inches. And going into Thursday, snow showers likely before 1, then scattered rain and snow showers. Cloudy with a high near 38 and east winds to 10 miles per hour, chance of precip on Thursday is 60%. Thanks for tuning in to a Juneau Afternoon.